Got it. A very happy birthday, Stephen Melillo. I am so honored to be able to have Stephen on his birthday here to do this special recording. There's so many things we wanted to talk about. It's like just a couple of days before Christmas when we're recording this. And we had a wonderful conversation with Stephen, who has like 1,200 and 80. Is it 1,280 or have you done two more pieces? 1,280 pieces. And I have always felt so blessed to be able to listen to his inspired music. And I think I figured out what it is on an email that he sent out the other day about a piece that he did of Christmas Passion called Gloria. So we're going to talk about what happens when you create music that comes from that place of the highest place and capture it, and how that music can heal you and lift you up. So aloha, Stephen. How are you today on your birthday?
Good, and thank you.
You're good? Look at you. Oh, it's, I know birthdays are kind of an interesting time because it marks another year and you kind of reflect back. Have you been reflecting back? Because you're very into numbers and syncs. Have you been reflecting back?
I mean, I'm in a constant state of reflection, so it's just a normal day for me.
But it's not. It's your birthday. you put out a beautiful post that we're going to do a share here, a screen share. And we're going to go into how you were able to create, not just in the piece called Gloria, which we refer to here, but how you do in the Gray 2 and 3 and so many of your other pieces. And I've also have to comment because people, if they're seeing the video, can see a beautiful rainbow, which I love rainbows. Over, was that a lake or clouds that rainbow was over?
And it's across the street from me. And usually that is a cotton field or a corn field. And just one day there was a double rainbow out there and over the snow. And I just took a picture.
It's beautiful. And you put in here some beautiful words that I read and I went, that's it. Talk about that beautiful song, which I just love, Gloria, or people know it as Angels. Sometimes we have heard on high. And you talked about an interesting thing here, recursive space-time continuum. That's such a great line. I mean, I could go off and into the Matrix resurrection with that one. I just was watching a little bit of the Matrix. It's such a deep subject with space-time continuum. But you said, when listening, I feel all moments at once. And that is such a metaphysical truth of the highest. When you are in the now and you feel all moments at once. Though I know what is coming, I surrender it. I'm forcing myself away from the emotion. I try to listen as detached composer arranger. So let's just do a breakdown. Let's dive deep and unpack that sentence. Okay, Stephen?
The idea of feeling all the moments at once. So, you know, Einstein said that the reason we have time, or the feeling of time being lapsed, is so that everything doesn't happen at once. So I think that if you're a physics person or a science person, you could look at that sentence and take it from a completely, you know, theory of relativity point of view, which is that everything is in fact happening at once, and except that's in the illusion of time. Now jump to what music is. Well, music is a time art. So you need time in order to unwrap the journey and the story of a piece of music. When I wrote this, okay, so this piece, but probably every piece that I've written, I experience all the moments of the music at once, right? In other words, for me then to write it out in a timeline in which time is passing so that a person can experience it, I have to unpack what is like a dot in my mind. So in other words, think of math and think of point. So the music is all in a point, but now it has to be pulled out into a line, right? So, and the line, of course, is going out across, an, if you picture an XY coordinate graph, you know, and the X part of the graph is the intensity level and the dynamic level, and the Y axis is the flow of time. So that what you're experiencing is a dot, the complete meaning of the piece has to be pulled, you know, extruded like over time so that a listener can embrace the journey and hopefully put it back into the feeling of a dot again, where everything becomes one thing, one point in, you know, space-time continuum. I mean, I don't want to sound like a Star Trek commercial, although I love Star Trek. But it's the only words I can think of, because it is that. It is everything in one moment.
So let's take that. And it's so interesting because I say a prayer or an affirmation from the point of light within the mind of God, that light stream forth into the minds of men. And then I go from the point of love within the heart of God, that love stream forth. And when I, because I've said that every day of my life for, I don't know how many decades, but you know, so I've thought a lot about that point without putting it in the context, you're just putting music in. So when I think of that point within myself or soul, and then I think of the point of light within the mind of God, there's so much that then goes on. And if I were to put that in a point with music that could also contain that point within the center of all things within the mind of God or the heart of God, then music could be the bridge, couldn't it?
Yeah, you know, I actually addressed this too. There's a piece on the gray 2 and 3 called We the Timeful in the Hands of the Timeless.
Yes.
In other words, it's the same idea. We are beings that are extruded over time, but our destiny and our existence is actually in the hands of the timeless, because God is timeless. God
right.
is eternal, right? So if you picture that God is every single point on that line at the exact same time, and we have to experience the flow of time. So it's a paradox. It's yin and yang, right? Because we're moving towards something, but from another perspective, we're already there.
Well, you know, that's what's behind all Zen. Zen koans, of course. You do know that.
Yeah.
I mean, in Zen, that's what you're supposed to try to get at, is the fact that you can't figure it out. And when you realize you surrender to not being able to figure it out, then you just experience it. So it's interesting, we're talking about it and saying you can't figure it out. because there is, it's an interesting paradox there. And if we were to try to bridge music, and I'd like to tie in something you did on a lovely piece with the 34 Matrix, you're talking about healing power of music as well, because you just mentioned Matrix and I did too. So when we tie this in with the Matrix, understanding the 34 Matrix, you wrote this 1991, Stephen. 1991, yeah, that's a long time ago you wrote this.
Yes, this is actually, okay, so see, this would probably drive a lot of people nuts, you know, but I have a very mathematical mind to begin with. So, you know, because as you know, maybe people listening don't know, I was a physics major before I went into music, and I was very drawn to math. Now my kid's got that DNA. He's a naval architect, you know, student at Virginia Tech. So the first thing that I devised was what you see there, a 4x4 matrix in which there are numbers 1 through 16. Now, here's the cool thing. Any way that you add those up, whether it's in rows like this, right, or columns, or diagonals, or the corners, or the inside, they always add up to 34. So this whole
thing, really,
this whole thing has been designed to be a massively recursive symmetrical organization. The next step is then to get the 16th note, the third note, right? The third of the key, right? The second of the key, the 13th of the key. Vertically, these are the harmonies, right? The 16th, the 5, the 9, the 4. And then consider all of the ways that you could move in that matrix and always have 34 as the result and never ever leave 34. So the reason why there's a huge historical significance to the number 34, and it's great that we're talking about it now at Christmas time, because 34 is in the, first of all, it's in the Fibonacci series, and which Bach wrote in the Fibonacci series. And the other thing is that 34 is the symbolic number of resurrection, because Jesus was crucified when he was 33. And therefore the number 34 is symbolic of resurrection. So that is all of the thinking that goes into designing this thing that I call a 34 matrix, which I think I even, you know, I explain it in the notes there. It's not really music, like, in other words, it's not like the Beethoven Ninth Symphony. It's not an outpouring. It's not an expression that way. Instead, it's a totally mathematical, cohesive unit that actually takes 34 minutes to listen to, right? Because it's because the 34 matrix is spread over, out over 34 minutes, and it's designed solely for meditation and self-reflection and yoga. And that, you know, so anything that's like spiritual, you know, Tai Chi Chuan, no matter what it is, you put this on in the background and you don't listen to it the way you would listen to music. You just hear it. And my belief in this is that the vibrations, the sympathetic vibrations created by these numerical interconnectedness and this and the proportions and so on, have a sympathetic effect on your body. So that's the whole meaning of the 34 matrix.
And you recreate this idea of the 34 matrix in the piece. Which piece did you write that was based on this 34 matrix?
Well, that's the name of the piece.
Oh, okay. And where is that? What release is that on?
It's not. It's its own track. I think if you go to, I hope I have it there. You go to, stormworld.com, tracks,
okay.
Right? stormworld.com/tracks. And you just scroll until you see 34 matrix.
Amazing.
So here I give an example, right? So, you know, of how the organization can be done to create music, you see?
Uh-huh.
But the thing is that this music is not romantic, it's not jazz, it's not classical, it's not anything. What it is a purely mathematical interrelatedness. That's what it is.
Okay, so let's take that and go back to the screen share of what you wrote about Gloria, which I think is just heavenly. And then in that piece, you expressed perfectly how you were able to feel with the music, because music is a feeling instrument. And there you're just talking about something that isn't feeling. You're talking about what happens within the matrix of just experience. So how do you keep that experience within the feeling of that power of the 34 matrix and put it into something that is an emotional experience of the higher energy? That's got to be an interesting thing. I mean, because you can't use your mind that way and still create a piece or like Gloria, that it would be in the same context.
Oh boy. Okay. So did you want me to share the screen again? Is that what you want me to
Well, just because there's another paragraph you put on there on the one on Gloria, the next paragraph down, which is amazing, which I love, you know, this is the first moment where a goal, namely that of extending Gloria, which is a beautiful, beautiful piece that's on the Christmas Passion, without modulating it and without breaking the flow of it, by exceeding its own predetermined limits, brings tears. I cannot fight it. I will cry then at, and then you even down to the minute, 3 minutes and 52 seconds, that piece makes a strategic move to the key of G, which is so beautiful. And I hear that, but I'd never thought about it, breaking it down to God, Gloria, despite knowing in advance what will come, tears of joy flow. And then I weep, these harmonies, that sequence of events, those orchestrations. Does it sound as if I'm not writing this music? And that's the magic. That's what happens when that comes. So what do you do when you arrange to allow that to flow through you, where you are even letting that music and that energy flow through you, Stephen?
Okay, so this is very deep, but I'm gonna go for it.
Okay, good.
So when I'm writing any piece of music, okay, there is a process where it's me pushing out of myself onto paper or and ideas and so on. There is a moment somewhere in that process where the music is no longer coming from me, but it's coming back at me. And it's then that these little, small, little changes allow it to speak to me rather than me speaking to it. And when that happens, I cry. I know that's how I know the music is right, because it achieves that moment of absolute prayer, of absolute connection. And then I can't take credit for it anymore. It's like sort of frustrating, you know, because I really can't take credit for anything that comes from God like that. I mean, the music definitely is coming from God. It starts off with me asserting, I want to say this. I want to try this. I have this idea. But at some point, I'm looking in the mirror and all of a sudden I'm gone and there's only the reflection. And then I hear God speaking in that music. And a lot of times I hear, thank you. Thank you for letting me use you, you little untalented guy.
Well, and that is called grace. That's that moment of amazing grace. That's when you turn your will over to God and something else takes over that is called grace. And that grace is such a gift and it can be addictive. Because it feels so good when the grace takes over. But at the same time, you do what I do. When I hear a piece like Gloria or the one we're working on that you wrote this amazing music for, which isn't out yet, Love Conquers All. When I hear a piece like that or some of the pieces in The Gray, in The Valley of Heaven and Tears Will Fall, when I hear a piece like that, I want to listen to it over and over and over again, because something in me needs to have it in my DNA, in my energy field. And you do that. Not a lot of people do that. So I don't even tell a lot of people that I just listen to this over and over and over again. But you do that as well, right?
Well, you were speaking about Zen before. And of course, that the Chinese word for that is Chan. And One of the things that they say in Chan Buddhism is, how can a caged man teach you to fly? And by that, I mean, you have to, if you expect anything, your listener to experience something, you have to live it. That's why I say, and I always tell kids this too, on my tombstone, I want the inscription, you can't fake real. Because what's going on is that many, many people try to fake real. They don't really sound like themselves anymore because they're too busy in the assertion part of the music making and not in the reflective part of the music making, right? Because that's what you're ultimately after. You're ultimately after purity. So it doesn't make any kind of guarantee about you being a genius or you going down in history or you being the next Beethoven. There's no guarantee or promise of that. The only thing that you could do is be sincere. And when you do that, then you're opening the doors of the infinite and letting it take the course, not you.
You know, that's so beautifully said. And it creates another conundrum which is like, okay, that is what my goal is. And at the same time, we've talked about this. We just keep creating and creating. And you obviously have done that with 1,280 pieces. And then there's the issue of like, well, what do you do with and how do you manage all of this great gift that comes to you? And it, and for an artist like Van Gogh or like, you know, Beethoven or all these people, you've seen the tortured life sometimes genius artists have, is that they have a hard time doing anything but wanting to create because that energy is flowing through them. And then, but how do you do it if you're trying to do it all yourself?
Well, you know, there's a very autobiographical piece that I wrote called The Concerto for Violin and Orchestra. Now, the first movement is called Tormentations. So this deals with torment, right? This deals with the person who isn't sleeping, who can't sleep even if they wanted to, and this is their life. The second movement is called Romance. And what I always tell people about that is, at my funeral service, when you're looking for music, you want to play the second movement of the violin concerto, Romance, because it's everything that I pray about, think about, hope for. It's everything I fear. It's every kind of emotion. And it's really like an engram of who I was when I was alive. That's the piece. So how do you control it? You say you surrender to it. We talked about that. We talked about that too, right? I mean, that's a Taoist concept, right? So you fall off a cliff or something into a raging river, right? And the Taoist master, he doesn't fight the water, right? He just relaxes his body and lets the water take him where it is. And I've actually done stuff like that, by the way. I mean, I've actually lived through, you know, what it feels like to fight against the water and then go with the water. So they sound poetic and metaphysical and all this, you know, other worldly stuff, but it's actually very, very down to earth, pragmatic.
Well, it is. And at the same time, it's such a gift. And I mean, when I keep listening to music, I'm going, there's something here that really, really lifts my spirit. There's something here that expresses what I feel in my soul. And at the same time, you know, there can't help but be part of me going, well, what is the secret behind it? Of course, you know, in that Zen thing, you do accept it, you surrender to it. But at the same time, I think it's helpful for other people to know what you're saying, because in a way, it's a master course in composition and creating, because music is a healing force and music is a gift. And everyone's path, and it's a little different, but I think we all, I mean, obviously you've learned from Beethoven and many other masters. So when we go back and reflect on that work of people like you and other people that we are inspired by, we can take a part of that point that we started with, that point within the point, and we can relate to that point within us. And part of that point can be in our psyche, you know. And once you get that, you don't own it, but at least you have a way of communicating with it, I think. I mean, you know what I'm saying. You feel that about other great artists, right?
Yeah, what you're saying is, you're asking a question for other artists. How do I strip myself down to a point where whatever I'm making is sincere? Does it guarantee the goodness of it? Doesn't guarantee the Grammy award, none of that. But if you're talking about how do you get down to the sincere thing, that's a question of, you know, there's a book by Sabatini called Scaramouche, and there's a dialogue in there between the great fencing master and his student, and the student's getting really, really good, right? And he's like getting, you know, next to the level of the master. But the master always beats him. And so then the student says, I just don't get it. I just don't understand why I can't, you know, get to this other level. And he says, the master says, and I love this line. He says, Don Quixote's mistake was that he attacked the windmill when he should have attacked the wind. Mm. It's a great line because if you translate that to you're a music student or you want to be a composer or you want to do anything that involves expression, you have to go to the source. You can't say, well, I want to be like Beethoven and therefore I'm going to look at all his scores and stuff like that. You have to do what Beethoven did, right? So there's a thing called Dao Shi, and Dao Shi in Chinese means a return to the origin. How's that for cool? A return.
It's very cool. Origin. Why don't you come back to our get off the share screen and let's just see you talking in real time. Yeah, there you are. Because we could talk for hours. I said, we're going to try to keep it less than an hour, but it's so hard, you know, because this is the kind of thing that I love. And that's why I love your work. And I know it's your birthday day. I hope you're going to have some nice celebration with friends and family and get to do something you can enjoy the day with.
And me and my kids are going to make biscotti today.
Biscotti.
For all the people on our street, every Christmas Eve we go around, we make the rounds, and so I'm going to give them like a bottle of wine and some biscotti.
Oh, wonderful! Well, I just thank you for your sincerity, and I want to write down. Actually, I'm going to put it in my notes. Put in my notes what you said about what you want to put on your gravestone, because I want to remember that, because that was a good line. I want to write that down. What did you say?
You can't fake real. That's a message for all the people, and there's a lot of them out there who imitate me. Okay, stop imitating me. Not because, oh, you're offending me, but because you're offending yourself. You need to be the kung fu student who goes back into the woods. He doesn't learn kung fu by learning from this guy. He goes back into the woods himself, puts himself in the woods, and watches the snake defend himself against the bird. That's you have to go all the way back to the beginning. Dao Shi. That's T-A-O-S-H-I-H. Right? You have to go back to the beginning, the root of all things. Everybody makes that voyage. Right? So they might start out imitating things. But then at some point you have to throw everything away. Who am I? What happens when I just listen to the universe, you know, and what comes out of me? And you have to trust yourself, right? You never want to devalue yourself by imitating, unless of course you're paying them homage. That's different. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about actually taking another guy's soul and another guy's essence and pasting it into something that you're doing and calling it your own. You don't want to do that.
Well, on top of that, I think that what you just mentioned is very valuable for music teachers as well, or people teaching piano or something like that. We're raised reading. If you're taking piano lessons, you're raised reading music, and you read music and you read music intensely, intensely, intensely. And yet some of these people who read music get so concentrated and focused on reading music that if they were to take the music away and try to play, it'd be so difficult because it for years have only read what's written on those scores of music. And when you take away the music and just try to play, that moment, right? I mean, because I'm sure you were raised.
You take away the notation, not the
notation.
There's a difference, right?
Yes.
And we need those people.
Yes.
When, you know, imagine Beethoven writing a symphony, but there aren't a group of musicians who have dedicated
right.
notation like that. We need people that are wired in every way possible. We need the guys who are wired to write. We need the guys who are wired to conduct. We need the guys who, and girls, of course, who are wired to play. We need them. We're all part of one gigantic picture.
All different points within the point in the moment of now. The eternal moment of now. Well, I tell you, it's always a treat talking to you. I always feel like I'm learning so much. And it's just such a treat to be able to talk to you and delve into these subjects together. Let people know the best way to go to where all these pieces of work are. If they want to reference them, find them, get them, buy them. Where do they go?
You got to go to stormworld.com. You know, I'm a composer, and a lot of the stuff I write is big orchestral stuff and big band stuff. But when you go to the website, you'll see Stormworks in chapters, because the music's organized in chapters. You can explore there all the pieces, or you go directly to tracks, and those are all the recorded pieces.
It's a wonderful journey. And I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart and my soul for what you do, because it speaks to me and it always inspires me. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts of music and composers and creators and conductors such as you, is to be able to inspire people, which you do so beautifully. And I'm looking forward to working more with you in the future. And I hope you have a blessed birthday and Christmas. And I, again, deep bow of gratitude, Gasho, to you for who you are and how you express it so beautifully in your life and your music. Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.